Chapter 17. Needless to say, my squad was surprised by the thing that tore its way out of the pod. Its appearance was disturbing. I don't know how else to describe it other than to say it was man-shaped. It looked like a gigantic, lanky humanoid with limbs of brownish green and skin like wet bark. There were no eyes or other obvious sensory organs, but there were fronds here and there hanging from the body. These pulpy, sickly orange fronds ended in polyps that flopped and pulsated. I wasn't sure if they were organs like lungs or eyeballs or what. "Fall back!" I shouted, taking my own advice and stumbling away from the massive creature. "Don't fire yet. We don't know if it's hostile."
"Should I let it eat me first, vet?" Carlos called out. "Just to be sure."
The creature took two sweeping strides forward and stood in our midst. The fronds hanging from its body shivered and drifted up and down like bouncing hair as it walked.
"This is amazing," Natasha said in a delighted voice. "I've never seen anything like it. How does it move? What kind of musculature does it have? I'm dying to find out."
"Keep backing up," I ordered. "Sargon, have you got a bead on that big bulbous pod on top?"
"Got it sighted, vet."
About 10 seconds passed, during which the newborn creature stood and swayed. The orange fronds hanging from it kept swelling and lifting higher, like slowly inflating balloons.
"Did you see that?" Natasha asked.
She was the only one staying close to the monster. She was walking around it in a circle.
"See what, specialist?"
"One of those external growths. I'm sure it's tracking me. I'm getting the impression it's a sensory organ of some kind."
I saw it now. It was tracking her. The orange floating polyps were drifting, but with more purpose. They'd locked on to Natasha, and when she walked around the standing monster, they followed her movements.
"I don't like it," I told her. "Back off, specialist."
"It's shown no hostile intent," she insisted. "I'm going to try to get a sample. If it's a plant, plucking a low-hanging frond shouldn't..."
Nah, I'm not a rule follower as such, but Natasha's idea alarmed me. I knew her well, and she was the type that could only be brought to break rules and laws when she was curious or to help a friend. In this case, it was the former. Before I could order her back yet again, she trotted in close to the two monstrous feet and plucked a frond. It was only a small one attached to what might be the monster's toes. In my opinion, it shouldn't have hurt any more than plucking a single hair out of a cat's paw might. But I was wrong. The creature reacted as if stung. Torpid and confused before, it moved with sudden purpose. A hooting sound erupted from far above us. It was as if someone had activated a foghorn and left it on. Long, low, and loud, a single note of noise rolled out over the forest and made our ears ring. Spinning its vast bulk around with a speed that belied its behavior thus far, the monster dipped one of those seven-fingered hands toward Natasha. "Fire!" I roared, having seen enough. The squad opened up, lashing the tree and legs with explosive pellets. Sargon's belcher had been craned to a medium-wide aperture, and he used it to burn away a dozen clumps of those strange orange fronds. A few of the big ones even caught fire. The creature went absolutely berserk after that. It missed Natasha with its scooping sweep of a claw-like hand, but then it switched tactics and began to stomp. Hanson died, then the rookie Lau. It went after Carlos next, but he dodged away and ran off, screeching and firing over his shoulder. "Sargon, narrow that beam and take its head off."
"Not sure it's got a head, sir."
"You know what I mean." Sargon fired, but just took a burning chunk out of the shoulder. The beast spun around and crashed onto the forest floor. Carlos was still running, almost out of reach. That long, long arm shot out again. It caught Carlos as a man might catch a fleeing rat. Lying on its side, the monster lifted him up to its upper body and seemed to study him briefly before popping him into its maw and crunching down methodically. Carlos only screamed once before he died in those massive jaws. The hole was a little small, so the creature had to shove to get him in there, all the while chewing enthusiastically. I would have thought his armor would have saved him, but the creature exerted such great pressure on the breastplate, it collapsed with a wet, popping sound. The creature's distraction gave Sargon time to take aim. The monster's slavering jaws and eyeless face gave it a slack, idiotic expression. It chewed with mechanical efficiency. Sargon blew the bulbous head clean off. Before he did, however, I was treated to the sight of blood running down the side of the tree trunk face. After being shot, it didn't die right away. We had to blast away every sensory frond and destroy its limbs one after another. Even after that, the burnt carcass still twitched and rolled around on the forest floor like a haunted log that had been struck by lightning. Breathing hard, I grabbed Natasha by the shoulder and spun her around. She was still examining the thing. "Happy now?" I demanded. She blinked at me uncomprehendingly for a moment. The odd thing was, she did look sort of happy.
"That was amazing," she said breathlessly. "I've never even read about anything like this. Do you know what this means, James? They aren't constructs. They're grown this way by these trees. All this time, I was under the impression that the creatures that attacked Minotaur were a form of genetically engineered bioweapon, something cooked up by a scientist like me. But I was wrong. The megaflora, they grow these monsters. I think they're a natural form of defense."
Peering at her, then looking at the carcass, I had a hard time understanding her words.
"I lost 3 good people because you didn't follow orders," I told her. "That's what I know. You're on report, and you might be on your way to the brig."
"I'm sorry," she said. "Can I complete my investigations first?"
Giving up, I made a sweeping gesture with my arm toward the fallen monster, which was still flopping this way and that.
"Be my guest, girl. Have at it. But the rest of you, if Natasha gets rolled on or squirted with acid, do not endanger yourself to save her. That's an order."
I stomped away to check on the dead and the wounded, while Natasha busily poked and probed at the dead creature. While she worked, I reported the encounter to my superiors. Graves came on a few minutes later.
"That's the second report we've had of pod growth. What does Natasha think they are?"
"She says there's some kind of natural defense for these plants."
"Right. Makes sense. Bring samples back to camp, and you should be heading back soon. Darkness is coming, and the word is that there are more of these creatures moving around out there."
An hour later, we dragged ourselves back to the lifter with samples of the monster on our backs. Natasha made her report to Graves while I stood near.
"The blood and digestive fluids are acidic," she said. "But not dangerously so. They aren't the same manifestation as the creatures that attacked Minotaur. Still, we have to assume they're related."
"But they're plants," Graves said. "Have you figured out yet what makes them move? What kind of musculature they have?"
"Think about them as something akin to a beetle or a crab," Natasha said. "What I mean is, they have a shell rather than bones. They have a tough cellulose exoskeleton, but they keep all the organs and muscle inside. They have an alien form of muscle. It's not like ours."
"So, do you still think the megaflora is growing them on purpose?"
Graves asked.
"As a defensive mechanism against us?"
"I'm almost certain of it. That's the only explanation that makes sense. These creatures weren't here until we landed, and now they've been growing and breaking out of their pods. What's even more interesting is their chosen physiology. In my opinion, they're mimicking human anatomy."
Graves said. "Why?"
"I'm not sure, but I'm certain it's by design. The initial creatures that assaulted our ship were less humanoid. These are bigger, but more like a man. Whatever shape they take, they're dangerous."
"You have my complete agreement there,"
Graves said, reviewing the video showing Carlos being eaten. Graves turned toward me then.
Miguel, what was the count of pods on that tree where you found this abomination?
Hesitating, I at last shook my head. I didn't take a firm count. I would say there were less than a dozen, sir.
Natasha raised her tapper and pointed to it. I was taking streaming video the whole time. I count 14, including the one that we destroyed.
13 more monsters in the forest, Graves said thoughtfully. That's my lucky number. Did you know that, McGill?
I'm not feeling so lucky today, Centurion. Graves walked away and left me with Natasha. Seriously, Specialist, I told her. I need you to follow orders when we're under fire.
When have you ever...
I halted her with an upraised hand. That's not true. I follow the orders that matter, orders that are justified and which will save my fellows and my mission. You endangered all of us to satisfy your curiosity.
Veteran McGill,
she said, drawing herself up straight.
I don't think you're being fair. We discovered an amazing new life form. Don't worry about Carlos. He'll pop back out of the oven in a few hours.
Shaking my head, I turned to go. She wasn't getting what I was saying, and I was tired of repeating it.
Just a moment, she said. Aren't you going to talk to Winslade?
About the revival queue? I guess it doesn't seem all that important to me after the events of the afternoon.
James, the freighter crew may have information that's vital to the success of this mission. Let's not have all this turn out to have been a waste, because I got curious.
She knew how to get to me. She knew I hated the idea of suffering and dying needlessly. All right, I said. I'll give it a shot. She nodded while I tramped up to the officer's deck. As far as I was concerned, I was on a fool's errand. Winslade didn't even want to listen to me, much less take any advice I had to offer. After I'd explained to the Primus about the dead crew of the freighter and that we had reserved the right to revive them during this pursuit, he gave me an odd look.
Claver, Winslade said. You're talking about Claver, right? I knew you had a shady past with that snake, McGill, but I didn't think you'd go this far.
Blinking, I stared at him for a moment. What's Claver got to do with this, sir? I asked.
You're going to play it that way again, are you? The hulking ignoramus routine. It gets old, McGill, it really does. Claver was on the freighter. You arranged that part yourself, according to legend, helping him to get the titanium delivery contracts.
I don't remember anything about delivery contracts.
Winslade rolled his eyes at me. I hated that, but I waited for him to explain. How else did you expect Claver to cash in on the lucrative deal you helped set up for him if he wasn't flying cargo back and forth from Machine World? Didn't your best friend at least send you a text?
I frowned, thinking hard. Claver had been given the right to trade titanium from Machine World, but only to other parties, not to Earth. We got our share for free.
I'm confused, sir, I began. To put it mildly.
Well, I mean, the last I knew of Claver, he was on Earth. He was arrested, you know, and put on notice by Central. I didn't know he was released to go out to Machine World and do business.
Winslade crossed his arms and huffed. Central, arresting Claver. You're talking about Equestrian Nagata. That man has no idea what will stick and what won't. He's honorable but stupid. Central wasn't going to let anyone hold Claver. Earth needs that titanium. Who better to get it than a snake like your friend?
I followed his logic to a degree. Apparently, Claver had been authorized to transport and deliver titanium from Machine World. It wasn't surprising that I hadn't heard about that. I ducked out of Legion politics as quickly as I could once I'd returned home to Earth. But now here I was, back in the middle of it all.
But, sir, I objected, Claver was given the right to trade titanium with other worlds, not Earth.
Right, Winslade said in a condescending tone.
Let's go over the logic of that statement, shall we? One trader was given the right to transport and sell some of the titanium to other worlds, while the balance went to us. Now, how do you think the actual delivery went down?
I have no idea.
I thought not. It's the same as the delivery of any product. Claver was already transporting the product to multiple customer worlds. Why wouldn't he make his delivery rounds in a single ship, collecting a transportation fee from everyone along the way, of course?
Of course, I said, finally catching on. Claver was a slippery businessman. If there was a profit to be made, a deal to be cut, he'd get it done. I could see how he'd used his position to lever delivery contracts with Earth in addition to other worlds. The metal was free, technically, but it still had to be transported. It only made sense to have one transportation network from a supplier world. Why duplicate the effort?
So, I said, you're saying Claver was aboard the freighter, according to the manifest, and he died when the ship slammed into Earth.
He was probably long dead by that time, but your statement is accurate enough in the essentials.
Well, sir, I said, then I suggest we revive him.
What a surprise! Let's hear your reasons just for the record.
Because if there's one man in the cosmos who knows what the hell is going on out here, it's Claver. He may not want to tell us, but he knows the score.
Winslade chewed on his upper lip for a time. I tried not to watch.
Agreed, he said at last. He's the only one we can ask. After Turov and Tribune Drusus have been revived and given their blessings, we'll...
Whoa, hold on there, I said. Let's back that up, Primus. I strongly recommend that we get Claver out right now, before anyone else.
Winslade frowned at me.
Whatever for? Are you trying to get me into difficulties with my superiors? I know you excel at that sort of thing.
I do, sir, I do. But I want you to think about something. If Turov could have revived Claver at any point along this search into space, why didn't she do it?
Winslade's eyes narrowed until they resembled those of a ferret.
You're right. Such primitive cunning. But it's undeniable. If she'd wanted to do it, she would have done it during the voyage out here.
Exactly, sir. And might I add that if she didn't want to do it before, she's not going to allow it once she's back in charge of this mission.
Winslade looked stressed. He began to pace. I could see the warring thoughts within his mind. He wasn't sure what he should do. If he crossed Turov, it would cost him. But then again, he wanted to know what Claver might say. His own survival might hang in the balance.
There is something wrong here, he said. I'll admit that. And another point has occurred to me. Did you know Turov wasn't too keen on this mission to begin with? She wanted to turn around and abandon the search after the first target world was missed.
I heard something to that effect, sir.
Winslade eyed me with calculated respect.
You've got my mind churning, veteran.
Yes, Primus. I excel at that.
Winslade flicked his eyes down to his desk. He tapped on a virtual keypad that appeared before him, and soon the revival queue, as it stood now, was displayed. He studied it and made tisking sounds.
This won't do at all, he said. I'm going to go further than you suggested. I'm going to fully streamline the revival queue. I'll make sure the best possible use of our limited resources is achieved.
For a second, I blinked at him. Then I got it. He was going to reorder the queue, micromanaging the process. He would decide who lived again and who stayed dead.
I understand perfectly, sir.
I wouldn't go that far, he said in a condescending tone. But you understand enough to do my bidding. That will suffice.